Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
Hey kids, just a reminder, if you like what we do here at Shake Them Ropes, click on that link in the description, the red circle, and click the tip jar and throw us a buck or two, because we ain't doing live reads anymore, and we ain't volunteers. If you don't like what we do here, forget I said anything. Now, Shake Them Ropes, which you don't like what we do here, which is weird.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. A lazy Saturday version of Shake the Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is the ginger beer drinking ass lord, Chris Novembrino. I tried to get you to spit take. I couldn't do it.
Ass lord rides again, baby.
Okay, there's not a lot of news, Chris. So I got to pick your poison. Do you want pop culture? Or do you want arcane music talk?
Let's go pop culture.
Dr. Pepper surpassed Pepsi as the number two soda in the world, Chris.
I believe that. Tie this into wrestling
and do 30 minutes while I leave.
I could do the Coke versus Pepsi thing with AEW. Tony Khan did that several weeks ago, remember?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what I always think about with Pepsi is the Pepsi Challenge. And for those of you who are too young to know what the Pepsi Challenge was, decades ago, Pepsi was trying to pass Coke. And they did a head-to-head thing where you would have a sip of Coke. Basically, you could have some Coke and then you'd have some Pepsi. Which one did you like more? And what Pepsi found at that time was that people in a head-to-head, one-off in this scenario, actually preferred Pepsi slightly to Coke. And Pepsi was very heartened by this, thinking that they had a chance of surpassing Coke. But the thing with Pepsi is that their formula is not something you want to keep going back to. And so the reason why Coke is successful is, yeah, it's less sweet, and it maybe is less satisfying on that first one, but eight Cokes later, you still are probably fine with Coca-Cola. And I'm not talking like eight Cokes in a row. I'm talking like, you know, like a week of drinking Coke. Coke is still good. By the end of a week of drinking Pepsi, it's too saccharine and sweet. You don't like drinking Pepsi for a full 12 pack. Dr. Pepper is not too sweet. Like, this is the whole moral of the story with sodas, is that like you want a cola. Cola's obviously got to be sweet, but if it's too sweet, people can't drink multiple of them. And that's why Dr. Pepper wins.
I don't even think Pepsi is the one keeping Pepsi afloat. I think it's Mountain Dew. Mountain Dew is the only soda in their catalog to me that anybody would pick over
Sprite.
An equal, like, well, actually, I think the Coca-Cola version is Mellow Yellow, but it doesn't have caffeine in it. It's only available like in the South.
Coca-Cola Freestyle. I've seen Mellow Yellow,
but it's like Pepsi's tried to do the Sprite thing. They had Slice, and now they have Starry, and they had Sierra Mist. Was that the name of the
yeah?
They've tried this a few different times with different things. They've tried to go after the other Coke adjacent products with an equal, like they went after, I don't think Sunkist is Coke. I think Sunkist is Dr. Pepper. Don't quote, or maybe they're just Sunkist on their own, but you know, they had Orange Slice and that didn't go anywhere. I mean, Pepsi's had like 8 million, you know, they've had Cherry Pepsi. They had something called Pepsi Light at one time, which was lemon flavored diet Pepsi. They've had Pepsi Free. They've had, you know, all these other things, and they just haven't been able. Pepsi is what restaurants and other, like Vegas is a Pepsi town for some reason, but I think that's just because you have to pay for Coke.
Yeah, that's I was thinking about this too. I think the one thing that honestly keeps them afloat is that they are able to stay in restaurants as the cheap alternative that no one actually will complain about. Like
they have the Señor Spielbergo of colas. That's what they are.
It's funny though, because it's like I feel like in my lifetime they went from being kind of the competitor to Coca-Cola to being clearly like the store brand version. Like just it's you have store brand, you have Pepsi products, and then you have actual Coke products.
Yes, you know what? I think Kraft soda killed them, to be honest with you, because it was like Coke, and then it's like, well, let's try these other things that are trying various, you know, people are now trying to be healthy, and you know, you had the La Croix, you know, fixation. You used to have like seltzer. There used to be like seltzer wars, like clearly Canadian and New York seltzer, which both are coming back, which is amazing to me. But it's like you go on that aisle, and it's like just all these like Fresca's good. I like Fresca, but that's also a Coke product, but it's like just things of like variants of soda that nobody cares about.
but especially as I'm thinking about the Pepsi versus the Coke variations too, it is like all the Pepsi ones, the way they try to compete is by being the sweeter version.
Yes, by being a direct competitor to it as opposed to differentiating themselves in some way.
Yeah, it's no, we're doing the same thing but sweeter. And yes. I think Coke has actually kind of gotten down to a pure science. The level of sweetness that humans generally want on a repeat basis.
Right.
Whereas, I think Pepsi products kind of just overkill that. They need to, I don't know what Pepsi can do. You know, like I think basically they're going to hang on forever by being the thing you can get at the Pizza Hut instead of, you know, paying for the Coke products. But
right.
I mean, you'll never, for example, you go to a bar, right? If you ask to get a mixed drink, no one gives you a whiskey and Pepsi.
Yeah, you never ask for a Jack and Pepsi.
No one gets a Jack and Pepsi. Right. No one. Yeah. And oh God, that'd be like, I mean, I don't drink anymore, but that'd be foul.
It'd be way too sweet. I mean,
it'd be way too sweet. Yeah.
No, that's a college kid drink. Like, the big one at UVA amongst kids who didn't like to drink, but would drink anyways, was Southern Comfort and Mountain Dew.
Interesting. Okay, so back in my day, we did SoCo or even Bacardi 151 and Dr. Pepper.
Okay.
That one works really good. Like SoCo and Dr. Pepper's awesome.
The 151 fireballs were out in a
151 and Dr. Pepper is dangerous. Yes. But if you get the right ratio going in there, oh, you got some college juice right there.
Yep. Okay, cool. I'll tell you the arcane music one after we record, probably. It's not that interesting. News, not that interesting either, because not a lot's going on other than contract talk. And contract talk doesn't interest me in the least. Just sign somewhere, and then, hey, we can talk about it. But this past week on Dynamite, having Rey Fénix wrestle on the same AEW Dynamite show as Volador Jr., Esfinge, Rugido, and Magnus, on June 5th in Loveland, Colorado, was notable because it indicates at least the beginning of some changes in the relationships amongst the two Mexican promotions in AEW. Previously, CMLL would not allow its wrestlers to wrestle on the same television show as other Mexican native wrestlers, whether they were working for AAA or not. This policy also affected CMLL's longtime business partner, New Japan, which co-promotes the Forbidden Door shows. This is why wrestlers like Penta, Rey Fénix, Andrade, and Rush were not able to work previous Forbidden Door shows, even though CMLL talent itself wasn't even on them. The idea that non-CMLL Mexican talent couldn't appear on New Japan is that non-CML Mexican talent couldn't appear on New Japan shows. While having Fénix on the same show as Volador and others would indicate breaking down of what Tony Khan called the Forbidden Door, it's not as cut and dried as that. This is Dave Meltzer writing. The updated policy is that, and things are subject to negotiations with AEW, CMLL, and New Japan, but it seems to be that people who have not worked for AAA of late but are Mexican-born will be allowed to appear on shows with CMLL talent. The belief is that will include Forbidden Door. We were told that Fénix hasn't wrestled in AAA for such a long time that his appearing on the show was fine. Rush was a different situation as he was on the show but didn't wrestle. CMLL has been okay with Mexican talent doing angles on shows with CMLL talent. I think that's a misprint, but not doing matches.
I think that's it's very big of the organization to allow themselves to do angles.
Dave
internally.
Not doing his proofreading. It's Thursday at 2 a.m. and he's whatever, okay, we get it, the AAA talent, etc. While obviously there will not be an MJF versus Rush match relatively soon, or obviously there will be an MJF versus Rush match relatively soon, it is not confirmed Forbidden Door and could be on television. Situation with Penta is unclear, but AEW believes they would be able to use him since the last time he worked for AAA on television was the November 19th tapings. He did work in a AAA-affiliated show on February 17th in Tijuana and was advertised for an April 14th show that AAA was working with Angel Promotions. Fénix has not worked a AAA taping since October 15, 2022. Triple Mania show in Mexico City. It's confirmed that unless things change, Commander, since he holds the AAA Cruiserweight title, would not be allowed to work on shows with CMLL talent, nor would El Hijo del Vikingo when he is healthy. Things are consistent. Bandito, when he's back, should fit into the same category as Rey Fénix. Does any of this matter, Chris?
Because I'm listening to all of this, and all I can think is, all this says is that AEW should utilize these talents on a big show in sort of the opening third of that show. And beyond that, Dynamite needs to be about wrestlers you can run angles with and build stories with and you have reliable access to. And this drama of CMLL and AAA doesn't actually... I mean, it's nice to have access to all these talents, but it's why Death Triangle feels like this really random thing that just happens on AEW television every so often.
I'm going to say something, and it's going to tick off a lot of people. And I don't particularly care. American fans don't care about Mexican wrestlers other than Rey Mysterio.
that's basically correct.
And that's WWE having done that for decades, where every Mexican wrestler afterwards that they brought in always has to be subjected, or not subjected, but they have to subvert themselves to both the memories of Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero. And it's leaked out to the other promotions, and you know what? Jobbing the Lucha House Party for years helped do this. Jobbing Angel and Carrillo for years has done this, and now CMLL guys come out there and they get to do a few moves against the Blackpool Combat Club. But guess what? Guys in masks equal geek to American wrestling fans, and if you want to change that, make them win again. Make them killers again, because I loved Esfinge on this show. I love Hechicero when he wrestles from CLL. I love Dragon Lee on WWE, but he is just Ray's buddy over there. I mean,
the model's so obvious, too. It's the discipline that WCW had in 1996 with their Cruiserweight presentation. They had a clear slot on the show where you expected Cruiserweight wrestling. The Cruiserweight matches, whether it was Dean Malenko versus Ultimo Dragon or Psychosis versus Rey Mysterio, any one of these guys, you saw them on a regular enough basis at a regular enough time slot that you grew to get acquainted with them as personalities, and they meant something. like Dean Malenko meant something.
Yes.
Ultimo Dragon meant something. Rey Mysterio meant something. Eddie Guerrero meant something. Chris Benoit meant something. Psychosis and La Parca later on.
One of my favorite teams under the radar. Oh, I love those two.
Oh God, they're great. They were such a fun heel team because there was always that level of like wackiness to them, but it was never so wacky that it got, you know, unrelentingly wacky. But La Parca was always a character.
And Psicosis was always a killer in some ways. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was, you had the character and the killer. And yeah, like just, I mean, they had a bunch of guys. It wasn't until later on where, you know, WCW gets to the part where they bring in like the Lizmarks of the world and that sort of thing in 98. And you're like, who is Lizmark? And he just gets speared by Bill Goldberg.
Hey, it's Hector Garza.
Gets speared by Bill Goldberg.
Yes.
Like, you know, that at that point, then we get something closer to the vibe that I feel like I've been getting on AEW television, where these guys are here. I'm told that they matter, but I don't feel like they matter.
Yeah, like who? Oh, this is setting up a match for Forbidden Door. Who cares? Because we've now seen two sets of four guys get beat by the Blackpool Combat Club. Okay.
I mean, right? Like, in a way, normally it's like the reverse of kind of a sustaining criticism I have of AEW. But like in this case, if you have no story to tell and no build to build with these guys, fine. Just put them on the card at the opening slot on the pay-per-view, and you know that you're going to get a really cool badass match, and just let's do that for 10 minutes. And that's a really nice 10 minutes to open up the show, or throw that in the middle of the show, and it's just a badass match.
It's actually the same complaint that AEW fans give WWE when WWE starts working with a group like TNA. What do those guys get out of it? Name a company that was better off when AEW worked with them.
Yeah, right?
AEW
hasn't helped New Japan's business.
They've strip-mined New Japan of most of the guys that were draws over there. And the guys that have been loyal to New Japan, we've seen them 800 times over there. You know, the Tomohiro Ishii's, the Goto's, all those guys. It's like, okay, great.
No, there's a real argument from the New Japan standpoint that the AEW relationship has been pretty disastrous for them, in the sense that, why do I need to be subscribed to New Japan World as an American fan now when I can see everyone that I used to give a shit about in New Japan on AEW television?
When I can see your IWGP champion on AEW Dynamite every week.
Right. Why would I still have a sub to New Japan World then?
And something that's kind of related, there's some problems over at TNA right now. TNA employees were let go, confirming PW Insider's report that longtime producer David Sahadi was let go. In addition, Fightful confirmed that Lou D'Angeli, it's the former Lou E. Dangerously from ECW, who was also the vice president of marketing for Anthem Sports Group, was let go. And also R.D. Evans left of his own volition. Personal favorite of the Jeff, R.D. Evans, a.k.a. Mixed Martial Archie, a.k.a. Robert D. Evans. I'll get into that story. Evans' WWE departure lives in wrestling lore, as word had it that after Vince McMahon screamed at him, he said, R.D. Evans said to Vince, "I hope you learned something today," to Vince, and walked out. It's one of my favorite quitting stories ever. Fightful Sean Ross Sapp told that an email went out thanking Evans and mentioning that he had given his notice. Now, at the same time, TNA is cultivating this relationship with WWE. I think this is probably going to end up being like an ECW situation where WWE ends up floating TNA for a little while and then realizes they can't be the number two company to overtake AEW in any way. And maybe buys out its wrestling library just to have it. I don't see them buying TNA and then bringing them all in, because I don't think there's a lot of upside there. They have some guys you could bring in, and Mike Bailey, Josh Alexander, and Jordan Grace right now would be the three main people, and they already have Jordan Grace. And I assume may come over and work with Ethan Page at some point, because they used to be tag partners and also run a feud, and Mike Bailey may as well. But what are you thinking of this TNA WWE quote-unquote relationship? Because I think Jordan Grace has come off as an absolute rock star on NXT.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's been about as good for the TNA talent as you could hope. I think Jordan Grace seems great. And I think that if they get access to these other talents, they are going to make sure that these guys have good, you know, prestige matches. Like, yeah, the NXT guys will go over, but I think if you bring in a Josh Alexander, you're not bringing him in, you know, just to have him
right
lose to Obafemi in 2 minutes.
Oh, that would suck. I do think there's going to be a crossover. I think right now, if I was going to say somebody's over there going over to a TNA pay-per-view or something to that effect, given the story right now, I know a lot of people are saying because her contract is up that she may go into the Owen Hart, but I think Natty is going to TNA for a one shot to wrestle either Jordan or somebody else for the title over there for one of those things. I do. I don't think she's going anywhere near the Owen Classic on AEW, even though that's kind of been, it's kind of been floated behind the scenes, but I think Natty's a lifer with WWE because of her husband. And I don't see that happening. Anything else on this story, Chris?
I mean, I could see Ivar going over TNA.
Once he gets better. Yeah, he's injured right now.
Oh, he's injured right now, yeah. But
you know what? I think you could send some young guy, like Brooks Jensen. You know, Bull Buchanan's kid who's doing the whole, I'm looking to get booked. He's kind of doing the same story as Natty a little bit of ways. And he could lose over at TNA, and it would be fine. You get some of these guys who are, they're not quite stars on NXT, but they're
Josh
Briggs.
Quantities.
Briggs would be another good one, I think, because Briggs needs some seasoning. Maybe somebody can work on a character with him over in TNA that he can bring back over. Sean Spears wouldn't be the worst person to send over there. Yeah, but I think some of the younger kids to work another territory type of a thing, I think that would be a good thing. Like some of these people in this ladder match as well. Like, I had the name I had, Paisley is the name I have on my lips, and that's not a name.
Tatum Paxley.
Tatum Paxley would be a good one.
She's got talent. She's like figuring out the character thing, but she's always shown she bumps well. She actually has a lot of like nice offense. She's not a bad talent.
No, I was Jordan. What was his name? Kehlani Jordan was one I was thinking.
Kehlani Jordan would, I think she, you know, she needs a little bit more work. She's not as far along right
now.
Yeah,
she's a gymnast who's doing okay in wrestling, but yeah.
Saul Ruka would be good over there.
Ratings, everybody kind of up this week. It was a good week for them. Raw, 1,679,000.53. SmackDown, 2,310,000.65 in the demo. Two numbers everybody's concerned about. Dynamite, 790,000.28 in the demo. NXT, 768,000.22 without Sexy Red. Is that her name? I am Caucasian. Collision, 378,000.
I mean, she was an outstanding talent, and I've been listening to her music constantly ever since I was exposed to it.
And then Rampage, 255,000.09. Any comment on the numbers from this week? NXT.
I mean, I'm not gonna bite on the NXT catching up to AEW thing.
I'm not either.
It just doesn't really matter to me at this point. I mean, AEW's goal to me is not to beat NXT, it's to hit a million. And insofar as this week they're closer to a million than they were last week, that's good. Good for them.
That'll do it for the news. Let's go to the lazy river of wrestling criticism, including Vader Club this week, a interesting one, a baseball bat match from Eastern Championship Wrestling pre-ECW 1994, 1993, the Headhunters versus Miguel Perez Jr., and Crash the Terminator, a.k.a. Hugh Morris. We'll get to that at some point during this thing.
Oh, Hugh Morris.
Fat guy moonsaults was my theme, so that's why.
No, I know, right? Like, it's like, that's the one thing, especially as I used to see him all the time on WCW television. He was like a staple of the first hour.
Yeah, no, when he came in, he was such a revelation because nobody had seen him on the Northeastern Indies type of a thing. But we'll get to that in a moment. We will start on the beach of the Lazy River doing a preview of NXT Battleground Live from the AFC Apex in Las Vegas, Nevada. Corporate synergy abounds, Chris, as the TKO relationship cements that NXT is on an overpriced ticket in a gym for the UFC. But we will start with the ladder match for the inaugural NXT Women's North American Championship. Sol Ruka, Lash Legend, Fallon Henley, Jada Parker, Meechan, a.k.a. God, I forgot.
Mia Yim.
Mia Yim, thank you, versus Kehlani Jordan. In a preposterous six-woman tag this week where heels and baby faces were tagged teaming with each other.
That was the brainchild of Mr. Stone, who wanted to see how they'd all work together.
I love Booker T. He goes, who gave him the power to book matches? And I was doing the same thing. I'm like, yes, who gave him the power to book matches?
None of this is, I mean, you know, you could just have a match happen or whatever, but the fact that they gave this as the pretense of the setup was just so funny, because it's a dumb idea for Mr. Stone. And then why does he all of a sudden... I mean, I guess they sort of have set up that he has Ava's ear, that like he's been talking with Ava a little bit backstage, but yes. It's all goofy. It was funny.
Who do you have winning this inaugural one? I think there's two people it should be, but and the person I thought it was going to be did not eat the pin, so.
Oh boy.
It will not be Mia Yim. She is in there to basically, as the veteran presence, telling everybody, you know, keeping everybody on track, which is a very smart move.
I think it's going to be the one who just turned, not Brynley Reese, Fallon Henley.
Okay. Yeah. I thought it was going to be Fallon Henley until that match. I think they're going to do this Lash Legend is a champion at the same time as Trick Williams is a champion.
Yeah, and then I'm looking also at the actual like little thingy, and Lash is positioned center, and she's actually slightly bigger than everyone else.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. This is a Lash Legend vehicle.
Although I think it might tie into the main event later, so that could be it as well. But I'm gonna go with Lash Legend on this one, though. Fallon Henley, I think she deserves a run with one of the titles before she gets called up, because she's ready to be called up. So,
It's like that, and also, Lash is not a great wrestler still. You know, it's like putting.
She's improved, but she's not great yet.
Right? Yeah. No. It's. I mean, honestly, I kind of view it as the same problem with the Trick Williams thing. Like, on one hand, you want to get people belts to make, you know, to help, you know, improve their status, but I think with Trick, maybe they belted him as the main champion too soon, because he doesn't really have that 20-minute match in him. And I, you know, if you do that with Lash at the same time, I think you make the card weaker.
I think Lash is going to be used as leverage in this main event, but we'll see. We'll talk about that when we get there. For the NXT North American Championship, Oba Femi, your champion, versus Wesley and Joe Coffey. This is going to be overbooked mess as we somehow get rid of Gallus to finally focus on these three.
The idea that it's going to be Gallus comes out and they're like, we're just going to do a 3-on-2 match to get Joe Coffey going, and Avis backstage going, yeah, that's fine.
It's probably
great manager. She's really crushing it.
It was going to be the tag team that they took out to get there is probably the ones, but boy, I would love Javon Evans to come out here and just do a couple of cutters, because his cutters are some of the best things on TV.
Yeah, right. So like that I think will be the thing, is like Wesley will have some help, or maybe Oba debuts his own, you know, he decides that
that would be him. Interesting.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oba. They won't do this, but I think a really fun way of doing this match is like Gallus comes out there and Oba just debuts his guys, and him and his two buddies just absolutely annihilate Gallus.
Just murder
Gallus and Wesley. Yeah, exactly. They're just dead. Yeah.
Oh, my guys are the authors of pain.
Yeah, right. Cool. I've got my guys
equivalent. Yeah. Two football players they have at the PC that we've never seen before.
Those two guys that the Gallus beat up.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
The guys who look like High Voltage if they were from the city.
Or Hank and Tank. That would be interesting to me. because I those two guys are both hosses. And
also, like, I think, like, when Gallus beat up those two guys on Tuesday, that was such a dumb. Yes. That would have been way better to have done with Hank and Tank.
By the way, that should be the name of their team. Those two guys, because I can't remember their name. In an NXT Underground match, Shayna Baszler versus Lola Vice. I think this is going to be awesome because it's two actual MMA people doing MMA. I could see this getting too silly, though. Lola Vice is just going to shake her ass at some point. And I'm just like, God, it's going to take me out of this match so bad.
I just need her to be a killer now. Yes. I know she's hot. I'm aware. I have eyes. I see it. She has a lovely body. She just needs to kill people.
But
now,
Chris, that's the marketing part of it. Oh, she has to entertain the people by shaking her ass.
I know. It's it's incoherent with the message, and also, like, I think she could do that a couple times in a match, and it would be perfectly over that she's, like, sexy and lethal. She's like a femme fatale. Like, you know, I think she just leans too much into the femme, yes, and not enough into the fatale. And we need to get more of that.
Shayna involved in this is interesting because she's going to eat a pin. Or either her or Zoe is probably going to eat a pin. Or Isla Dawn next week in Scotland. So maybe they do something where Zoe Stark comes out and helps Shayna win this. I don't know, but
No, I think Shayna's getting knocked out. I think that this is Lola knocks out Shayna, and we kind of, that's how we move this along.
A match I'm kind of excited about, Roxanne Perez versus Jordynne Grace for the NXT Women's title.
Should be a lot of fun.
Should be fun. I actually could see a case where Jordynne Grace wins this title. And then somebody goes over to TNA and wins Jordynne Grace's TNA title.
Oh, that's interesting. And actually launch an inner brand angle like,
yes,
that.
Yes, because that would be my choice because it's the more interesting choice. I don't know. I haven't heard of any plans to bring up Roxanne. Everybody thought she was going to probably be brought up in the draft. So
it would be really interesting, though, to build this to a Jordynne Grace versus Roxanne title versus title, where Jordynne Grace is the NXT champion and Roxanne's the TNA champion.
Yes, I think so too.
That's a very interesting angle.
I can't pull the trigger on the title change, though, because I think there's a chance of a title change in the NXT title. That would be the big talking point coming out of it. But the interesting choice here is the belt Jordynne Grace. Who do you have?
I think Roxanne retains, but I'm with you. The interesting choice is the belt Jordynne Grace, and think the money angle here is Jordynne Grace and Roxanne with the dueling company belts, and like that's fun
on the other's shows.
Yeah,
dueling angle. Yes,
yeah,
no, I
that's
agree.
So
that would
fun.
Get me.
I'm into that.
I would watch TNA for that just to see what they did with
Roxanne. Yeah, you would have to see the segments, right? Yeah, and even just the recaps on NXT would be really good for the synergy and stuff. I don't know if they're going to be bold enough to do it, but if they are, I'm waiting to applaud them for it.
Nathan Frazier and Axiom versus the OC of Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson. Both Mia and the OC have been around SmackDown too, doing angles, and at least Mia Yim looks revitalized. I don't mind the OC on this NXT show though either. They haven't been phoning it in on NXT like they have for so many years on the main roster.
The backstage segments are entertaining with them. I think,
yes,
Gallows and Anderson are great talkers. They're good characters. They're a welcome asset to the middle of the card here for just like a, you know, steady tag team match and a steady feud to get some character out of these people. And I mean, I think Nathan Frazier and Axiom are winning this.
Yes. And I think Anderson's going to bump like a champ for them too. So it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah. And Gallows, I think, will actually do a good job catching them and all that stuff too. So yeah.
Trick Williams versus Ethan Page. For the singles, in a singles match for the NXT title, 2 weeks in, look, I can talk to you all day about two-week angles and how much I've hated them on AEW and how much I don't like them on WWE or AEW either, but they're doing them on now shows because it's like the AJ Styles Cody is a two-week angle. This one is kind of a two-week angle. But to me, this is probably going to be a bit of an overbooked mess. I think Lash Legend comes down to celebrate or something like that prematurely, and Ethan Page threatens to hurt her to make Trick Williams submit or some convoluted finish like that, and that Ethan Page becomes your NXT champion.
Yeah, I'm kind of cruising to Ethan Page becomes the champion.
This doesn't matter. NXT titles don't matter. This is all training for those guys to get the main roster. So if Trick Williams loses this title, it's not like, oh man, he only had like a couple months reign as champion. Doesn't matter. Ethan Page is the veteran hand here leading him through a thing, and we need to get emotionally connected to the Trick Williams character before he goes to the main roster. So I am all over Ethan Page winning this match 2 weeks in.
And the kind of trend here with NXT has been actually to have the belt on a polished guy for a long period of time rather than the unpolished guy. It was Carmelo who was polished. It was Ilya Dragunov after that who was polished, and Ethan Page is polished. And I think rather than letting Trick get overexposed here, you can have him get screwed and we're all sympathetic for him and we want him, you know, to get the redemption or whatever. He's better in the chase than he is with the catch.
Or it's a thing where Ethan Page's leg is on the rope for the three count.
Yeah.
And he loses it, but he still has it. Hey, if you're a champion of honor, you'll give me a rematch, et cetera, type of a thing.
Yeah, I think this ends ultimately with Ethan Page as champion, whether that's here at this show.
Or the one for SummerSlam.
Yeah, the next one. But, like, I think Trick Williams' title reign's not long for this world. Where does Noam Dar fit in with all of this, too, with the Ethan Page thing? I mean, that could be a part of this.
That could be.
Yeah.
I mean, because Lash is with Trick, but she's also with the Metaphor.
Yep.
And so somehow maybe Ethan Page is now the new leader of Metaphor with Gnome as, you know, there's ways they can go with this.
I definitely see like Lash in peril costing Trick the title, whether it's Metaphor turning on Lash.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Miss Jackson attacks Lash and like all of a sudden you see like Lash getting beaten up or whatever. And
Ethan's hired the Metaphor, but Lash doesn't want to go through with it type of a thing. And so, yeah, that kind of, but it's going to be a little bit overbooked. You're not going to get a straight match out of this one.
No, but that's fine. And that I think is also emblematic of, you know, covering up Trick's shortcomings. Like, look, if he was more polished, you could just have a straight up match with him, you know, you have to do stuff like this with him as a champion.
Any other random NXT thoughts before we move on?
No, I'm completely with you on the Ethan Page stuff. I think has been just like kind of exceptional. Like really, really good.
This is where he belongs.
Yeah.
I mean, he has that. God bless him. AEW does not like its guys getting over with promos. I don't know what it is about it other than MJF, and God, we can go into that promo if we want. But
yeah,
I would like, but before I go to AEW, I would like to make the case, because this show has gotten the short shrift on this show for a number of weeks, and occasionally we go back to it. But because we're recording on Saturday, I had a chance to catch up on some SmackDown for the last 2 weeks. This show is such a breeze to watch. Everybody, I mean, the commentary of Corey Graves and Wade Barrett, they seem to enjoy the product and they seem to enjoy each other's company, which is, you know, great. You're not getting bickering commentators. Paul Heyman is doing some fantastic work as a wise man who's in over his head, maybe, as this bloodline continues to recruit new people like Tagovailoa and Tama Tonga.
Yeah, he initially the thought process was strength in numbers, and now he's realizing with numbers comes drama.
Well, he's also realizing that the new breed has completely wiped out the entire old breed, as Solo Sikoa is now officially head of the table, and Solo is remarkably comfortable on the microphone now. That's the real plus to this. Is that Solo Sikoa is coming into his own as a quote-unquote leader. Does he have main event charisma yet? Not quite, but he's getting there. Heyman and KO did a segment last week that was just sublime because you can tell. I mean, Heyman puts a little bit more sauce on it when he's in there with guys he really, really likes. And the Heyman KO thing was great. And this week for me, something that a lot of champions don't do, because there's too much of champions dismissing challengers in wrestling. Bayley, who y'all know I love me some Aunt Pam, but we haven't talked about Bayley in a long time here on this show, it seems. Her hangdog slash look of concern over fighting Piper Niven, who nobody believes is going to win this match. But Bayley is making you believe that there's a chance that Piper Niven might come in there and murder death her and take the title in Scotland. And there was a promo segment between them and Chelsea Green and Piper where basically they do the old I respect you thing, and Piper goes, you can take your respect and shove it. I've been doing this for longer than you have. While you were here in NXT, I was trailblazing over in Europe. So take your I respect you crap, this oh, I'm second tier, and shove it. And it's made me interested in the match for next week. And you know, they're building up other people. I mean, AJ Styles, and everybody's saying, oh, he did the Mark Henry retirement angle. This felt more to me like the Terry Funk Ric Flair at Music City Showdown, I believe it was, where it was like after he beat Ricky Steamboat, it's like Terry Funk comes in. If you've never watched this, it's a fantastic angle.
Oh, it's such a good angle.
He's a judge in case it goes to the time limit draw, but Funk comes in and goes, hey Rick, you know, I'd like to congratulate you on your win. I'd like a shot at the title. And Terry Funk's been retired for some time. And they remind him, hey, you know, there are rankings here. You need to move your way up the ladder to get there. And so Terry Funk just attacks Funk and pile drives him through a table. They kind of did that with AJ Styles, where it's like, I'd like a rematch because, you know, that backlash match didn't go the way I go. And Nick Aldis goes, hey, look, you need to go back to the back of the line and work your way up. And so you know, AJ Styles, no, I'm just going to retire instead of that. Instead, he just makes it as a plan to attack Cody. And it was pretty phenomenal stuff last week. And they did a great follow-up this week where Cody is now channeling his inner Crockett, which is great because I assume that the next for him is going to be his wacky Hogan feud with Uncle Howdy and their crew. But it's now an I Quit match between AJ Styles and Cody Rhodes at Clash at the Castle. And I'm like, I'm here. They're doing some good stuff on the B show, and it gets short shrift because it's on a Friday. And by that time, everybody's kind of wrestled out a bit, although people are still watching. 2.3 million.
No, it's really weird. Cause it's like at once my logic is just like, one, we tape on Friday or Saturday. And yeah, so it's always after, but also like I'm a person who has stuff that I actually do on Friday and Saturday night. So I forget that for the people who don't have stuff to do on Friday and Saturday night, right now SmackDown is absolutely something they're popping on.
Yeah. And or it's on the DVR at least. And you know, it's, hey, you know, if we get home late or we're not doing something on the other night, we can watch it. So yeah. SmackDown well worth your time to watch these days. The melodrama works for it. I get that it's not the wrestling that's perfect for me, but the angles are clear, the builds are clear and progressive. I'm digging the show.
Yeah, and I mean, we've talked about this. My preference for TV is more story, less wrestling.
Yes.
So that scratches my itch.
Yes.
I want this on as I am off of work and laying on my couch. I'm not trying to like hyper focus in on the nuances of the submission hold. I'm trying to enjoy dudes yelling at each other.
Yeah, I enjoy the dudes yelling at each other. And then when I want to hyper focus on the wrestling, I do that on the pay-per-view. And
right,
I'm cool with
right.
that. Yeah.
Like that to me is the rhythm of wrestling for me. It's like the pay-per-views for the hyper focus on the quality.
Yes.
Yeah.
Your turn, sir.
Okay, so that basically, I think, maybe brings us to AEW here.
Where do you want to start on this AEW show?
Boy.
Which I thought was decent, but it's like, it was also just, I watched it, I go, well, that's kind of mid.
I guess we should start with the MJF promo.
Okay.
Because, I mean, at least this week we decided to, you know, open up with MJF, which I think was...
That was a choice that was made.
It was a choice that was made. I mean, his new character is a choice that he is making. It's like Roddy Piper MJF, essentially, is what we're getting now.
With Triple H in there a little bit, too. A
little bit of Triple H in there as well. And it's like, I find... The dynamic that he established with him and Swerve, on one hand, yeah, like it's the former champion, he wants the belt or whatever, but it only makes you feel that much more confused about how you feel about Swerve.
Yes.
After watching MJF. Am I excited that MJF is back because I want him to be the champion again? Or do I want Swerve to be the champion? Like, what do I want? I don't know, coming out of this.
I agree. This promo. let me kind of break down the promo and also the thing and see if you agree with my argument here, because for the most part, I listened to that promo, and I went, everything they did on the pay per view with the promo there, they virtually just undid here, because that did you see the promo from the pay per view?
No.
Okay, the promo from the pay-per-view was angry MJF saying, I no longer want friends. I'm no longer doing the kangaroo kick or the funny stuff. This is all about hate. And I was pumping my fist at the promo because it was a phenomenal promo until then he showed the, and I'm staying in AEW and I have a tattoo of AEW on my Achilles.
I remember this.
Okay, so he comes out this week. And it's back to, I'm your scumbag, wackety schmackety MJF. And I just go, they've completely sold that out. He decided to do kind of a meta promo here because he's talking about the three big free agents that they've signed other than Mercedes. And he's not putting them over as talented. He's putting them over, with the exception of Will Ospreay, which I'll get to, which was the best part of the promo. The Will Ospreay stuff was pure pro wrestling champion promo, where he's like, you know, I beat all these guys and you haven't beat any of them.
Yeah, that part was fine, but you know.
Swerve, go to a business class and learn to talk. The Okada, God. You need to buy a gym membership because you don't look like you work out stuff. That was, I don't know.
Tony Schiavone, that'll put butts in seats sort of promo.
That was meta stuff that I don't think you wanted to put out. That doesn't have, unless he was going to tie it in with their performance in the ring of some kind, or if he's saying you don't deserve to be champion type of a thing.
Well, shouldn't
it needs to be MJF... wrapped back into the, it needs to be wrapped into the kayfabe as opposed to just doing the, I'm commenting on your character and how you're performing your character right now.
He also should have something to say about the Undisputed Era and Adam Cole.
Yes.
Like, the main event on this show was Roderick Strong of the Undisputed Kingdom versus Swerve Strickland.
In a title match, because he asked for it on I think it was Rampage, where he goes, I was going to be next in that gauntlet, so I deserve the title match. And Tony Khan gives it to him. It's preposterous.
It's preposterous. And... MJF should have a thought on that. He should, I think in particular, hate Roderick Strong. Like, honestly, yes. the sort of, I think the initial feud for MJF is he goes and beats Roderick Strong, right? Like that, you know, to kind of get under Adam Cole's skin, you know?
No, and then we have Roosh come out, and MJF goes, I can't understand anything you're saying.
Right, and then he does his MJF thing of like pivot back a little bit. Well, you know, I respect you. I did hire you.
Yeah, that was lame as hell.
Lame as hell. Like, I don't. It was at once. It's like, okay, yeah, it's good to have MJF opening your show, and like, I guess I could applaud that choice. But then it also depends on what you do with MJF when he opens the show. You know, and I didn't think that this was good business. I guess I'm interested in the Will Ospreay thing.
Here's where it would get interesting for me. Because if this were Japan, theoretically, Roosh would come out and just kill MJF. And then MJF can go, oh yeah, I forgot. This is all about hate, and I need to be angry, and I'm going to stop the comedy stuff. And Roosh just beat my ass. beat me all around the ring.
Or even better, Roosh comes out and MJF just like throws down the microphone and just beats the shit out of Roosh. Like this is not the start of a feud or anything. This is a guy who thought he was going to come out and start a feud, and MJF's just completely blowing past it.
One of the two, I guess. I really like Roosh and how he's just so stiff with everybody. And I thought that's what they're trying to bring up here, because Roosh isn't going to put up with this evening at the improv crap. I don't know. Yeah, it missed for 2/3 of it, and for 1/3 of it, I was like, okay, yeah, the Ospreay stuff's really good, because he's basically saying Ospreay hasn't beaten all the guys I've beaten, and yet somehow he's on this trajectory to be the next world champion after or whatever. And it's like, okay, cool, I can get into that part of it, but the rest of it was just, yeah, your character sucks and you suck doing it, and I just went, nope, I'm out of this.
Also, no real opinion about, I mean, sort of like loose opinions about the Bucks and everything, but it just didn't feel like this should have been a State of the Union sort of like address.
Yes.
And this is more like, I don't like these three guys.
And it was really non-committal. I don't like the, oh, that part. I thought you meant the Bucks. The Bucks was such a non-committal. Oh man, they're really screwing up the production now.
Yes. Right. No, it was a very like, yeah, I thought it was bad. And it wasn't even I support Tony Khan. It's Tony Khan was bad. They're worse.
Yeah. Tony Khan's a mark. These guys are worse. It's like, oh geez. Thank you, Stone Cold.
I know. Boy.
Look, I got a tattoo of it, but I hate where I work.
Right? To me, the money right now would be a tenuous alliance between MJF and Swerve. Yes. To defeat the Young Bucks and Okada. Like, essentially, you have, or even better, a tenuous alliance between Swerve, Ospreay, and MJF.
I agree.
And they realize that they need to be the actual team AEW. They almost sort of started telling this story this week with Swerve and his promo too, where he's like, the next time you put together a team AEW, don't forget about me. But like, it needs to be the baby faces who all have this one thing that they want, the championship. Also realize that like, they have a shared goal here of saving the company, and they need to work together and put aside their differences. And then we get the classic dynamic of the babyface team who can't work together super well versus the heel team that works together much better.
Yes, it's a can they coexist that's actually interesting.
Exactly.
I'm going to tee up here. So they finally decided to start doing the Bucks are very bad at production and are canceling segments and are finally screwing with the TV show 6 weeks into the angle, Chris.
I was about to say better late than never, but that's not always true.
No.
And then it kind of gets into,
although why is Tony Khan and Gorilla for Roddy Strong to ask for a match against Swerve?
If Tony's in Gorilla, then like when you cut the Acclaimed segment, why wouldn't Tony be back there? Like I don't, it doesn't make, and Chris Daniels is there too.
Chris Daniels is practicing his lines for when he comes out and says, oh, we're going to have a match. He's inept as what he's doing, because it's like, okay, you're an executive vice president too. How come you're not standing up to these guys? Instead, you're out there making it. It's all the worst parts of figureheads in wrestling without any of the thought of why we're having figureheads in wrestling.
Yeah, right. Chris Daniels is like a poor man's Adam Pearce right now.
Yes.
Adam Pearce and Nick Aldis are actually, you know, doing their jobs just fine. And like, then they introduce the Chris Daniels character. I mean, if you're going to do this, he needs to have like this active hand trying to fix things. Like,
he has no autonomy. I mean, it's when they have the McMahons around with the general managers and the McMahons are bullying the general managers. It's like, well, then why do you have a general manager here?
Right.
Dopes.
I mean, Daniels should be coming out and trying to correct things like reassigning refs or, you know, restarting matches. Like, there should be a real sense of power struggle on this show. And I mean, I think that it's further undermined by MJF coming out and basically being like, Tony Khan's a twerp. I don't like the idea that Tony Khan's our savior, but this is the story that we got right now. Like the idea is that Tony's good and we're supposed to like him. And we started the show off with actually Tony Khan sucks.
I will say one thing I do like, but I want a little bit of a pivot here. Brian Keith as the dark cloud of the learning tree, as the grouchy smurf of the learning tree, as the guy, I hate everything of the learning tree. I adore, but it can't, funny. Just all be, it can't just all be, you need to respect Chris Jericho. I just want him to just hate whatever Chris Jericho is saying. It's like he comes out, I hate parties. I hate babies. That's all I want from him. That's all.
Big Cass and Brian Keith are very, very entertaining as these characters. Sucks.
Bill is doing the I'm going to take Jericho's nonsense and heighten it another step. I was like, oh, the sun is shining. It's a beautiful day out today. Everything's coming up roses. And so there's Brian Keith just mad at the world. I hate this.
And there is something like very like Redwood and Bad Apple, like has,
yes.
Like, yeah, it gets funnier each time. It's one of those ones that like, it's a slow burn thing and it just gets funnier.
It's a 70s bank robber film, Redwood and Bad Apple.
Yeah.
Show with Thunderbolt and Lightfoot, you know?
They, those two James Bond villains, Mr.
Wint and Mr. Kidd?
Yeah, Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd. There's like kind of a, I mean, minus the obvious subtext of Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd, but like,
yes.
the weird, they are foils to one another in terms of like, you know, the way they look and the, you know, their vibe, if you will.
Yes, we have to excuse the obvious subtext of the of Wint and Kidd.
Minus the obvious subtext.
The fact that I know so much about James Bond saves you right there. go ahead, because I kind of threw in a couple points there.
Beyond that on AEW Dynamite.
Or you can go to Raw.
I'll say this. Mark Briscoe and Brian Cage was at least a match with no necessarily obvious outcome to it. That Briscoe works as a foil to Cage. Like they both, Briscoe is just fine having a fairly unstructured match.
People want to see Mark Briscoe and nobody wants to see Brian Cage.
Right. Right. No, that's what I mean. He's a great foil. He's perfectly good at having an unstructured match and people actually want to see him,
Let me take that back. I like Brian Cage in small doses. I wish they'd kind of do something with him being a muscle-headed freak who's just a jacked-up dude and angry and a badass. But then they like put him on every show, every week, where he gets all of his stuff in and he gets to do all of his moves. And then you get tired of seeing Brian Cage.
And he can't really talk.
No, he can't.
So he can't talk, and he's not a character. He's just
a
vibe.
And he doesn't destroy people. He's not a destructive force for a manager or something like that. He's just
he looks like if the tag team Chronic had a kid. That's his character.
Man, is there anything on Raw you want to talk about?
Raw continues to be a very entertaining show.
Yeah, it's very entertaining, but it's all right? But all the angles are still kind of the same. This is kind of a holding period.
Yeah, this is definitely a holding period. I mean, you know, I guess we finally did get to the Sheamus Ludwig Kaiser stuff this week, but
that was good. That was great stuff.
I know that. Yeah, and I continue to find the Judgment Day things to be like the Judgment Day continues to just anchor this as a through line for the show for multiple different angles. Liv Morgan's character work continues to be, in my opinion, pretty strong. And I think she's a welcome addition to the Judgment Day storyline.
Yeah. And Damian Priest has really been killing it.
Yeah.
He really has as the leader. I wasn't expecting him to be this good of a leading man on a wrestling show. I mean, I think he's uber talented. I think he's always had a weird badass presence that has never really been tapped into, because WWE doesn't do the kind of badassery that I'd like to see out of him. And when they say, oh yeah, Punishment Martinez is 40 and he's got to go to the main roster now, it's like, well, that's not going to last too long. Absolutely has outkicked his coverage, is eminently likable, even in this heel thing. That's the thing that's getting to me, is that he has a certain sarcastic charm that they actually tried this same thing with Drew McIntyre when he won in the Empty Arena Mania thing, where they're trying to figure out which kind of champion he would be, and Vince was kind of experimenting. And he has it now in kind of the angry, you know, the angry aggrieved charm thing, but Damian Priest has what Drew was lacking at that time. And it's really helped this show a lot.
Oh yeah. He is, yeah, right. He's a combination of cool, like, he actually has a lot of the Scott Hall energy.
Yes. That's a good call.
Yeah, it's Scott Hall, only Scott Hall was more of a vibe. Like, even as Razor Ramon, the promos were never amazing. I mean, it was always this, like, kind of bullshit pseudo-Cuban thing that Scott Hall was doing. it was Scott Hall was the in-ring work. Whereas Damian Priest is, like, a more complete Scott Hall. I think the ring work is, you know, as good, if not better. And the mic work is vastly superior and not nearly as contrived.
And now, Chris, we will end with this. It is time for Vader Club. From Ultra Clash 1993 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the main event of the show, a baseball bat match between the Headhunters, Crash the Terminator, and Miguel Perez Jr. This card is interesting. I watched the entire pay-per-view last week because I have it. It wasn't a pay-per-view. It was a tape. Also on this card, Terry Funk and Stan Hansen defeated Kevin Sullivan and Abdul the Butcher by disqualification, which was every bit the hoot you might think it is. And then also before this match was Shane Douglas beating the Sandman, but this was Surfer Sandman, like, beforehand. If you've never seen Surfer Sandman, brother, but yeah, I was in the mood for Headhunters, for Vader Club. I love the Headhunters. They were really my entrance into FMW/Japanese hardcore wrestling. Whenever they'd come to the States, I'd be so geeked out. I remember there was an ECW show in either, I think it was 95 or 96, where one of them broke their leg during a three-way dance, which really disappointed me. They had a cup of coffee in WWE as the Squat Team. I believe they were managed by Jim Cornette. They were in one of the Rumbles. But it was always two guys who look like Abdullah the Butcher who can do moonsaults, which always appealed to me. Now, this match was preposterous in every way.
Yeah, right. No, if you're – look, this is not a match that you watch thinking that the work is going to be good. Or, I mean, this is
a walking brawl in many ways.
This is a walk, and the single camera coverage of this,
yes,
does not add, yes, to they does not actually add to the intensity.
It they had a camcorder on a tripod in the crow's nest, and that's what you're gonna get. So if you're expecting great camera work, don't expect it. Joey Styles is in full-on Joey Styles mode by this time, though, covering the play-by-play and color simultaneously. Explaining the rules of this match is both teams get introduced, and then they will go to opposite sides of the ECW arena, and there's a baseball bat in the middle of the ring, and these big hosses will rush to the arena, and whoever gets the baseball bat can then use it.
And that would seem like a really important aspect to this match, but for the fact that there are 8 million other effing weapons in this match, yes, including steel chairs. So, and a scaffold and a bunch of other shit.
Like, a scaffold that was used earlier. I believe it was in the Tommy Dreamer match.
I know, but like the I get that it's like a hardcore show, but it's so funny to have a stipulation and then to massively undermine it. Like, why do I care about a baseball bat when Miguel Perez is fighting one of the headhunters on top of a scaffold?
Like, my favorite part was, I believe this was at the point where they hadn't been telling the owners of this building that, oh, by the way, we're going to go through the wall and kill your drywall. So they are putting giant holes in the drywall of the thing by throwing various headhunters in there. And then we get to the part of the match where it's just headhunter tries moonsault, doesn't get there, whatever. Crash the Terminator, aka Hugh Morris, does. And then, but he misses, and then Headhunter, you know, everybody's jumping off top ropes and stuff like that. Look, this match is a
the missed elbow drop by the Headhunter. Jesus,
I howled at that. I went, "Oh my god, he broke his arm."
I have this on as we were talking about this again too. And yeah, I just watched the elbow drop spot. She's like, "Oh my god, that must have hurt so bad."
Because he landed flush on his arm. Oh, he wasn't even like landing on his hip at that
and
point.
That's, yeah, that's not hip. That's like all side and arm. Yeah.
Ugh. But I had fun watching this match. Look, the baseball. Look, 2024 Jeff would be very upset that you could hit a guy with a bat this many times and he'd still be walking around like this.
I mean, I guess my problem, it's like when the steel chairs come out multiple yes. times in the match and that you're getting into like headshots with the chairs.
Yes, it's a baseball bat match. Just right. use the baseball right. bat. That's, we have this problem now with hardcore matches too. And you can see this as like a precursor to that. It's like, oh, we have a cage match, but we're putting tables and chairs and all sorts of other crap in the cage. Why isn't the cage sufficient enough for this match if it's just a cage match type of a thing? Yeah,
right. No, the stip, if you're going to do a stip match, the stip needs to be the point of focus. It's it's introducing Chekhov's gun and then the finals still gets stabbed. Yeah, like it ends as a stabbing.
We're going to have an I Quit match between AJ Styles and Cody Rhodes that's going to end in a DQ.
Yeah. it ends due to ref stoppage. Even better. No one quits. The ref stops the match.
Oh man, but yeah, this is way before, this is like about 2 years before this becomes the ECW we know and love, but this was also, but Paulie loved these types of things, bringing in this international, because this was from Wing, I believe, promotion. I believe the Headhunters were those champions, and this was their title defense for that, I believe. But you could see the building blocks of ECW throughout this entire show as we go. But yeah, this is still Eastern Championship Wrestling at this time, so it's still very bright. It's not dark. There aren't as many weirdos chanting for death and violence as there would be in later years, but it's an interesting time capsule, and I love the Headhunters. It's Chris's turn next week on Vader.
Yeah. I like the Headhunters. Watching Perez and Crash the Terminator, like these guys are very much, this is like what the Vince McMahon archetype was in the 90s. Like he wanted these overly big guys.
It's
and
so weird because Miguel Perez did time in both WCW and WWF, and the closest he ever got to a push was being the guy who basically ate all the pins in Los Barriquas.
Right. And he definitely has the size and the physique and everything.
Yeah.
But then with all of these guys, I mean, obviously, I'm not watching the Headhunters for Chris Bork or whatever, but like when you're looking at a Perez or a Crash the Terminator, what dates them to this era is, okay, yeah, they're doing moonsaults, but like, I mean, okay, Hugh Morris's moonsault from the top rope looks excellent, but like the springboard moonsaults and stuff, they're not actually landing these very well. And doing a moonsault where you actually don't splash on anybody, yes, it hurts you more, but it's a less skill-demanding moonsault because you're not trying to protect someone while also executing the move.
I remember during the WCW days when they'd call that basically a moonsault headbutt. I went, that's such a lame thing. Why? He's a big dude. Land on the guy.
Yeah.
For God's sakes. You know, which right. the Headhunters did, whether they wanted to or not.
Right. I mean, you need to be able to, you know, I think that's the thing for me. It's one, it goes back to the Brian Cage thing. It's one thing to be able to execute the moves, but they need to look good. Yep. And they need to have purpose. And I mean, in this match, I think, you know, I have to make sure I put my time travel cap back 30 years here, right? To 1993.
God, I can't believe it's been that long.
Where this many moonsaults in a match would actually really stand out of like, Jesus, these guys had so many moonsaults, because yeah. That would have been. But now I watch this and go, yeah, you did a lot of moonsaults, but most of them didn't look amazing.
Yeah, this got over 4 stars, I think, too, in one of the in the Observer or something like that. So it's like, yeah, you look at it with today's eyes and you go like, well, this logic doesn't make any sense. But back then, I mean, this was we hadn't even gotten to the point where people were pumping ECW on Rec Sport Pro Wrestling because Sabu and the Public Enemy were doing moonsaults through tables and nobody was on the table. You know, kind of a thing. I mean, it's amazing what was seen as groundbreaking back then versus what is now.
I know. Also, it's also funny too. Yeah, like back in those days, it would have been seen as more badass to do a moonsault through an empty table rather than actually something that's less skill intensive. Oh, it requires you to be nuts, but it's not actually. It's less difficult to not have to protect anybody other than yourself.
Let's end it there. We'll be back next week with a post-mortem on Battleground and a preview of Clash at the Castle. And Chris will choose our Vader Club match. It's been Shake Them Ropes. You can follow me on X at CrapGame13. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. You can follow Chris on his only social media at DOCTOR_NOV on the Instagram. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, have been here for over a decade, in case some of you all didn't know that. There's apparently a couple that didn't.
Really?
We thank you for listening, even if they're hate listens.
Yeah, no.
We know some of you do that, and your comments will never make the light of day. Anyways, you can also listen.
Are you hiding them all now, too?
Oh, yeah. They have to be approved first.
Yeah, take that, nerds. Yeah, no, I think they should keep posting them and see what happens.
They
or
do,
doesn't.
Trust me.
Oh, they do. Well.
But anyways, you can also listen to me on Fight Game Media's Dynamite Show. We go live on YouTube about 20 minutes after the show ends. A thorough deconstruction of AEW Dynamite from that Wednesday night will drop on your podcatcher's audio the next morning. Chris also has various interests and some other things that he'll tell you about now.
That is true. I teach music lessons. If you're interested in getting some of those this summer, hit me up on the Twitter, DOCTOR_NOV.
Instagram.
I'm not on Twitter. Twitter doesn't even exist.
Chris. Come back. It's good. It's good now.
There's no Twitter.
Get off of Blue Sky.
Yeah, right. It's really good now. He's really improved the website. It's so
I didn't
much-
say that. Not going that far.
Anyways, follow me on Instagram if you want guitar lessons. Otherwise, just remember that there's no time like the present, and that's why life is a gift.
Keep reaching for the stars.
Keep reaching that also as well. Yeah. And
let's end it there.
Never give it up.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.